the Rebel Room, and it all comes down to this. The week of the Mountain West Conference Tournament, if UNLV has any slim chances of extending their season, it's going to come at the Thomas and Mack Center this week. I'm Case Kiefer alongside Ray Brewer and Mike Grimala to break it all down. I will say probably the last time we podcasted, or maybe two times ago, we said that it was absolutely essential that UNLV not have to play in that play-in round, that they slide in the 4 or 5 seed. They do have the 5 seed, San Diego State, at 2:30 on Thursday. So I guess there's already one win. You got to like not having to play that extra game.
Yeah, it's good. I think UNLV, although if they had to, I think they could have managed. I think they went, 11-1 against teams below them in the conference this year. So
people don't like you bringing that up. Yeah. Should I yell at you for saying that?
They do. The fans are not happy about the UNLV. But UNLV had a super extreme split this year, which is very weird. They went 0-6 against the four teams ahead of them, and they went 11-1 against the teams below them. So it's a very, very separated split. Like, you can see the clear definition. UNLV is by definition, middle-of-the-pack team. They beat the teams below them. They lose to the teams ahead of them. I think they could have survived a play-in game, but it's better to not have to worry about that. And then the draw against San Diego State, I think it's pretty favorable for you. Not favorable, but among those four teams, San Diego State is probably the one that you want. You lost to them at the buzzer the last time you played. You get them here in Vegas, although it's not your home your home court. You know, you still get them in your building, and you know, if you play well, you get a chance to beat that team. Where I don't, even if UNLV plays well, I don't think they have a chance to beat UNR or Utah State. But against San Diego State, you got at least a chance.
Yeah, I agree. When I saw this matchup, I thought it was good for them. I remember how close the last game was, but I'm anticipating seeing where Brewer is at now, because when I said that I thought they had a good chance of beating San Diego State, you were so pessimistic, it caught me off guard. Do you still not like their chances on Thursday?
I like their chances better against San Diego State than I do against Reno or Utah State. I mean, let's be honest. That's a hell of a three-teamer we're asking the Rebels to hit, right? But I just go back to that first game in San Diego, and I get it. This game on Wednesday will be at UNLV's neutral site arena, and the Rebels played better in the second outing against San Diego State. But that first game, oh, my God, UNLV's defense was non-existent. Everybody on San Diego State looked like they could play for the Lakers. That's a bad analogy. The Lakers aren't great this year. But San Diego State just, they put up 90-some points. There was no resistance by UNLV. And it's just, I mean, at this stage of the season, of course, all games are going to be difficult. Teams are going to be fighting and clawing, but this is a tough cross to bear for the Rebels. It's a tough three games to hit.
It is. It's difficult. If you pressed me, I would say they have no chance against UNR, no chance against Utah State head-to-head. Those teams, the style and the personnel, I don't think UNLV can beat them. I think they can beat San Diego State. They were a Nick Blair made jump shot away from beating them last time they played. It's the thing with UNLV is, as we've said for most of the year, once we learned what kind of team UNLV is, if UNLV makes their shots, they can compete with a team like San Diego State. If they miss their shots, they'll lose by 30, which is what happened against San Diego State the first time. Because UNLV, their defense is what it is at this point in the year. I don't think there's any magic fix for the defense. They're easy to score against. You can get layups against UNLV. You can get open three-pointers against them. I think San Diego State will put points on the board. High 60s, low 70s, somewhere in there. If UNLV makes enough three-pointers to keep up, they'll give themselves a chance. So that's what it comes down to. Probably your two senior guards, Clyburn and Robotham, can they combine for 8 three-pointers to keep you in the game? If they do and they come through in that kind of way, then, you know, you take your chances. And I guess that's what March is for UNLV this year, the number 5 team. Ken Pom actually has them, I believe, as the fourth best chance of winning the conference ahead of San Diego State. So statistically, they see something in the Rebels where they're slightly better odds than San Diego State. So I don't think it's, despite that first game and how much that game scared you, I think UNLV can probably put up a better showing than that.
Sometimes I wish this was a video podcast because that elicited an eye roll from Brewer. I don't know if it's just any KenPom mention, but I will say maybe it shouldn't be an eye roll because even though they have the fourth best odds, it's still 3%. So it's not exactly like they've got a great chance, but I'm kind of curious of why that frustrated you so much?
Well, I don't know if it was the KenPom thing, which you guys are all into numbers, and that's good. I love numbers just like you guys do. But I like a point you brought up. If Clyborne and Robotham go for 8 threes, the Rebels have a chance to get San Diego State. If Clyborne and Robotham go for 8 threes, they got a chance against Reno and Utah State as well. I mean, that's 24 points.
I don't think it's the case against those other two teams. But if you look at the season finale against Colorado State, at Colorado State, I think they hit exactly 8 3-pointers. I think Clyborne went 6 of 6 and Robotham went 2 of 7. And that was just enough to squeak that game out. I think you could probably do the same thing against San Diego State and at least be in it. How much stock do you put in the old cliche, it's hard to beat a team 3 times in one season? Do you put any stock in that?
I think that's just good coach speak. I mean, with that said, do you see that, say UNLV does in fact beat San Diego State, do you guys think that the Utah State and Reno players and coaches are going to be like, oh, going to be tough to beat that UNLV team 3 times. They really took us to the limit.
I actually looked it up yesterday. I think 5 of the last 6 years, San Diego State has swept UNLV in the season series, and 3 of those were super sweeps where they sweep you in the regular season and then defeated UNLV in the Mountain West Tournament to go 3-0 on the year against them and end their season. So it hasn't been difficult for San Diego State to beat UNLV 3 times recently. I think this would be the 4th time in recent memory, so... I mean, it's a cliche, and I know Noah Robotham said it right after the game. It was one of the first things he said. Hey, it's going to be hard to beat us for a 3rd time. It hasn't been hard for San Diego State to do it.
Yeah, I think that was my immediate reaction, too. I think since I've been in Las Vegas, I think this is the 10th season I guess, at least tangentially been around UNLV, and I feel like at least 3 times they've been ousted in the tournament by someone that's beaten them 3 times. And I remember at one time believing that. I don't put much stock into that anymore. Anything can happen in one game. But I think the fact that anything can happen in one game, I think for sure if they beat San Diego State, they're going to see Reno in that semifinals. But these conference tournaments are wild. We've already seen Utah State have some really close games with Fresno State. I think they lost to them once. I think we're kind of doing a little bit of injustice to the bottom half of the bracket where we're just saying, hey, if UNLV does this, they're going to have to beat Reno and Utah State. A lot of craziness can happen. I'm not penciling Utah State into the championship game just yet.
Is it who would Reno get in their first game? Would that be the Boise State?
Boise State, Colorado State winner.
Because Boise State is interesting because if you go by the numbers and just they're the unluckiest team in the country. They lose every close game they play in. And if you're one of those people that believes in regression, they're either going to that luck is going to correct itself either next year, or if it all corrects itself at once in that game against Reno and every Boise gets every break, that's not an impossible game for them to win either. If Reno plays poorly and Boise State is, you know, spreading the ball around the way that they do and they're healthy, that's not an impossible game. I would give them like a 5% chance, 10% chance to maybe to win that game. So yeah, upsets do happen. We saw it last year. Reno didn't win the conference tournament last year. They got blown out by San Diego State. So it does happen.
Yeah, I just think I didn't even realize that about Boise. That did jump out to me, though. I could not believe they were the 9 seed. I mean, talent-wise speaking, yeah, you would not. There's not 8 teams you would be more scared of than Boise State. So yeah, that was. I think you just helped, build up my point. We've seen it in this tournament too. I mean, a lot can happen. So I think. Writing off UNLV's chances just because they'd have to play Reno and Utah State, I think, is a mistake because we don't know for sure that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, listen.
Are you guaranteeing Reno, Utah State? You seem to be the one on the most on this train. Is that the championship game, no matter what?
I mean, this league was pretty easy to predict this year. 4 teams that were good, 6 that weren't.
Utah State was 9th in the preseason rankings. Again, they won the league.
Once the league started to play itself out, I mean, Utah State and Reno are head and shoulders better than everybody else, right?
They played 80 minutes with Fresno, and they've scored the exact same number of points for Utah State.
Well, it's unfortunate that Reno can't play Fresno first.
So is your
let me go to a bigger point instead of trying to navigate our way through the tournament. Is Menzies coaching for his job Thursday against San Diego State? And then I got a follow up question, Grimala.
I don't think it's as simple as lose the game and he's out, or win the game and he stays. there's a lot more that would have to happen behind the scenes. Like, you can't let Menzies go until you have, and unless you have someone else lined up immediately to fill that position. We've said it before in this podcast. You can't fire him and then conduct a search. Like, you can't do it that way.
All the internet reporter, all the Twitter reporters think that Thad Mata is going to be the coach.
They do. And
granted, they don't have any standards that they're held to, and if they're wrong, so what if they're wrong? But if they're right, we have to bend over and congratulate them for being tied into all their quote-unquote sources.
Here's what I would say. Have I heard those same Thad Mata reports from sources? Yes, I have. Do I believe any of them are credible enough for me to, like, report them yet? No. That last offseason, Thad Mata was offered the head coaching job at Georgia. They offered him 5 years, $16 million. It's more than $3 million a year. And he turned it down. He said, no thanks. So what is UNLV going to offer him to bring him in? And where is that money going to come from?
Maybe he wanted to live in the 110-degree heat.
It's entirely... No, it's not even. I was going to say it's possible, but it's not possible.
Okay,
you've got to back up the truck for him, and I still don't know where that money's coming from.
Okay, so Marvin, who I like and who I believe should be the coach next year, is not coaching for his job.
Not per se.
In my humble opinion.
But if you go in and get steamrolled, and it's like that first San Diego State meeting, and it's like 96-60, and you get blown out, and you got no chance, and the team just looks terrible, then that's got to make you think about, you know, the state of the team and how close you really are to competing in this conference. You know, because as we mentioned, that record is kind of fool's gold. You know, you only beat the bottom half of the conference. You didn't win one game against the top half of the league. So, yeah, there is some – you've got to put some stock in. This has to be a measuring stick of some way. It's not the only measuring stick for Desiree Reed-Francois when she makes her decision, but it's a data point that she has to pay attention to. It has to mean something, how well you play in this tournament. So – yeah, I don't think it's simple as, like I said, win and you stay, but it's going to be a factor.
I'm sorry, you were going to talk.
Oh, no. I was agreeing with both of you. I think that he's not coaching for his job, but that doesn't mean he couldn't lose his job. I mean, I can foresee a scenario where San Diego State puts up almost 100 points on you again, and you just get blown out. I mean, that would be a pretty bad look.
If you get destroyed by San Diego State on Thursday, and then on Friday, Thad Mata calls your office and says, hey, I'm willing to take that cut-rate deal and give you a bargain. How, if you're Desiree Reed-Francois, how do you say no to it? Like, that's, you probably have to jump on it. So it's not, it's your,
I mean,
something.
I think she would only jump on that because it would show the fan base that she's trying to make the program better, and that would help sell more tickets to get people there. If Marvin stays, and we think he will, I could see where some supporters, the same supporters that want them to lose so Patino or Mata could come in, upset because they don't like Marvin. I think people are rooting for the Rebels to lose, thinking that would help bring change, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, you see some of that on social media. That's the vocal minority of people who think like that's the best way to take action, is for the team to lose and get blown out. And that's why they're upset when UNLV beats these bad teams and pumps up their record. They've got an 11-7 11-7 record in conference, but those people think that, you know, well, you're only beating bad teams. I wish we would lose to these teams instead so that we could get a new coach.
And the thing with people, Grimala, is anybody with a keyboard or a smartphone thinks they have an opinion that matters, right? You have an opinion that matters. You know why you have an opinion that matters?
Why is that?
Because you write for a credited, credentialed news organization. Right?
Yes. But I would say there's a difference between analysis and opinion, whereas analysis is what I offer. It's my professional opinion based on what I think professionally. Fans are offering just, like, personal opinions. I very rarely share my personal opinion of, like, if I shared my personal opinion on players and coaches and people and everything,
it would be
a lot different than my analysis that I present professionally.
Okay. All I'm saying is that what people failed to look at, and I'm not an economics guy, right? You guys know me. I'm not a numbers guy, right, Kim Palm?
I thought you just said that you were a number guy.
I was lying. I was lying. You knew that, right? Marvin Menzies is getting paid, regardless if he coaches the running Rebels of UNLV, in 2020 and 2021, how many straight years does UNLV want to pay two coaches?
But in this scenario, and I'm not saying I think Marvin should be the coach next year, I'm with you, but in the scenario where they have a new coach, they have the money lined up somehow to pay him.
Is that the single biggest factor
in if you want to speculate on a coaching change, the single biggest factor is how much money do you have to go shopping with? Like, if you're going to go out shopping for a coach, you have to know how much you can spend. And if you're going to go shopping at the Thad Matta, Rick Pitino level, you can't go out there with a $650,000 contract, which is what, you know, Marvin Menzies is making. You've got to, like, triple or quadruple that.
Yeah, UNLV
that, you know,
is shopping
coaches
at Walmart, baby. And the fans think we're shopping at, you know, in New York City somewhere.
If UNLV were to make a coaching change, or if Menzies were to be let go and you said, Mike, give me an article, five names to watch in the coaching search.
Let's say I'll say
I do that assignment, and I would throw on Kyle Smith, the USF coach. And they had a couple good years, 20 wins, 2 years in a row. I don't think UNLV could afford him. Like, I don't know if they could afford him. So then when you're asking me that to say that Thad Matta is a real rumor or Rick Pitino is a real rumor, I just, like Kay said, you've got to tell me where that money's coming from before it happens. Like, we've heard so often that UNLV, oh, the boosters are lining up behind this guy
boosters?
And that guy. Exactly. What we haven't seen that in a long time from the UNLV's donor support. So we'll see. I'm skeptical of the big name hires and the big money hires. So
I'm skeptical too. I'm just saying, if it happens, that has to be.
It's the number one.
That would
factor.
Be the reason, I would think.
Here's my deal with boosters, and our boss Brian Greenspun is probably still, he has an opinion on this, and he and I disagree on this. I don't like boosters. I get it. If it weren't for the boosters' money, then programs wouldn't exist, and apparently that money gives them an opinion. If I was a booster, I'm giving my money because I love the university and the program, win, lose, or draw. I'm not giving the money so I have the right to make an opinion.
That's how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be, I'm supporting the university. I believe in this athletic department. Here's my money.
I want these kids to have a better life and to enjoy college.
The issue is when they step in, and just like you see in pro sports, when the owners think that they can run the football operations, or they think that they can be the GM as well. You're supposed to be, you should be in a perfect world giving that money to the athletic department and saying, Desiree Reed Francois, I believe in you to make the decision. I do whatever you have to do to make this program
great.
Here's
$5 million. Bring Thad Matta in to under-recruit the Valley and bring us to the Mountain West.
That's such a utopian view, though. It just doesn't happen like that all that often. Not everyone thinks like you. I'm not saying you're wrong, but you can't put yourself in the shoes of a billionaire.
If you're
a millionaire, I'm sorry.
I can't even put myself in the shoes of a thousandaire.
If you're... There's someone connected to the UNLV program who knows the backstage dealing, and he says to me a lot, one of his favorite sayings is, Las Vegas is a town, a lot of millionaires, very few billionaires. What he means is, if you're like a Phil Knight and you're given to Oregon, you can just give it and say, oh, whatever, just do what you want with it. UNLV, the pockets aren't quite that deep. If you're a millionaire and you're giving, you know, millions to UNLV, you don't feel great about just giving that and just throwing it into the wind. You actually want to have some say in what happens with it. So it's like, here, it's conditional. Here's a couple million, but here's how I want you to spend it.
And now all of a sudden, Desiree Reed Francois, who I really like, is now in debt to said booster.
I mean, right or wrong, though, this is just kind of the state of college athletics. Like, this isn't exclusive to UNLV.
I hate that
There's
state.
A lot of places where you can have this. You know, argument, and I'm sure I agree with you for the most part, but there's places where, you know, the booster meddling in affairs has probably worked out very well and gotten more money and gotten the coach in there to get it done. I'm more on you guys' side that they shouldn't, but I mean, that's just, I think that's kind of delusional that this isn't happening in college athletics everywhere in 2019.
It definitely is happening, and like we said, that's the perfect worldview of letting the people do their jobs. It's not like that. People, they give you them, if they're donating money, they want to know, they want assurances of what it's going to be spent on. And I want my guy in here as the coach. And if you're Desiree Reed Francois and you're trying to get an upgrade in the coaching position, you need them. Like, you need that money if you're going to get that kind of coach, because it's not there in the budget. It's not there in your internal athletic department budget. The money's got to come from outside sources. So you need them. So you kind of have to work together and make it happen. So it's a complicated process. I think if Menzies, you know, if they have a good showing against San Diego State, if they win that game, or if it's a good game, I think he's done enough that I look at the roster coming back next year. It's pretty much they bring everyone back plus Shakur Justin. They lose their two senior guys in the backcourt, but they've got replacements ready, guys that are experienced. It's enough that I'm interested in seeing what happens next year. The wrench that's thrown into it is the attendance. You alluded to it earlier. If Desiree Reed-Francois wants to make a move, she can, and justify it with the attendance figures, because it's been terrible all season. So if she wants to make a move, she can, and the attendance can be the main factor, and no one will argue with her.
Well, God forbid, Grimala, that I'm done.
We needed to hear the continuation of that.
No, I just
you're gonna call out the fan base now?
No, it's. I mean, we've been having the same conversation for how many years?
Many. This was my frustration a couple podcasts ago.
The last time the Rebels made the tournament, I moved into my house.
Well, I looked up.
I've been in that house, Grimala, for like 6 years. We've been talking about this for 6 years.
Before we
started,
should
we fire the coach? Listen, how can we get more people to the games?
Before we started the podcast, I was looking up the records. When Lon Kruger took over UNLV, he took over an 18-13 team that went 7-7 in the Mountain West. In his first season, he won 17 games and went 7-7 in the Mountain West. So he took over a decent team and actually lost one more game than the previous season. No NCAA tournament. Second year, slight improvement to 10-6 in the Mountain West. No NCAA tournament. It wasn't until his third year that they broke through, 30-7 overall, won the Mountain West, Sweet 16 of the NCAAs. Next year is Menzies' third year. Like, you've got to give that to him. Not counting that first year, clearly. Next year is the third year. He's had two decent years in terms of getting the program back together. He's got a foundation under him. Next year is the third year. That's when you need the breakthrough. I would say you got to give him the chance to break through with the roster that he's put there. If not, then you can do whatever you want.
Okay, Grimala, Kiefer. I'm not to be my mother here.
You can't keep tearing it down every 2 and 3 years.
The first time I saw Chris Clyburn, I was like, Jesus God, they're stuck with this kid for 3 years. Right? There's nobody. Menzies had to take who he had to get 15 people on the roster wearing the same jersey.
Yeah.
Now you look at Chris Clyburn, he's arguably the best player on the team. Right?
He just won you that game at Colorado State.
Menzies could develop players. Look what he did. He developed that kid. He turned that kid from a 170-pound skinny kid with no outside shot who couldn't play a lick of defense, still might not play a lick of defense, into somebody who is a serviceable member in the Mountain West Conference.
I agree with that. My problem with that is you also at the same time perpetuate this myth that it's UNLV of the 90s and we're supposed to be high-flying and have more talent than everyone. I feel like you can't have name on the jersey, we have to be this good, and we're going to have these kids we develop over 4 years. You can't have it both ways.
Kiefer,
and sometimes your arguments,
a
I feel
little
like we
blurry
have it.
Right now, buddy.
Okay, I'm glad. Okay. If you distance yourself from that, then I think you can have your opinion that Menzies is going to develop these guys. They're going to build a program that way, and next year is going to be the breakthrough
year. High-flying. If they dunk the ball one time in a game, it's like throw a parade.
This is the first season, and I've been through a lot of these with you, as I mentioned earlier. This is the first time where I've actually seen your view change away from the name on the jersey theory.
You've been beaten down as much as I have. Okay. I mean, you start to change a little bit. I don't know. Well, I'm sure next week we'll talk about...
Would you support UNLV? Say they lose to...
I will support UNLV at every turn until I die.
No. Will you support UNLV in the CBI or CIT? Do you want them to play in one of those tournaments this year or something like that?
I would prefer them not to, but if they do participate in the tournament, I will take an interest.
Okay.
I just totally forgot about that just because they'd been so... Or not opposed, but they just haven't done it in the past. Is there a chance?
I think that there would probably be tournaments interested in them because their record is not bad.
And the name on the front of
the issue. The issue is Desiree Reed-Francois has said on record, we'll review Marvin Menzies' status after the season. So when you leave him dangling like that, how can you justify extending the season by another week? Are you going to let him coach another week and coach in this tournament before you tell him whether he's, you know, staying or going? You've got to get on with it. Like, once the season's over, like, the next day, you've got to let him know, and then you've got to either get on with the coaching search or let him do his job. I don't think you can really waste another 3 or 4 days or a week to play in one of these stupid tournaments. So I would guess that they're not going to do it.
Well, in a perfect world, they beat SDSU. They put up a fight against Reno. Season Mountain West is over. Next morning, Marvin walks into Desiree's office. She says, "You're our guy next year. CBI wants us. Let's go get Hardy some experience. Tell Noah and Chris to stay home."
That they could do. If she immediately comes out and says, like she did for Sanchez, even though that, I think, took a while after the final game.
Well, they had the
piece
of can in red, baby.
Yeah, yeah. So if it would be if she were to come out the next day after the season ends, after they lose in the conference tournament, and say, you know, Menzies is here for another year. We're locked in now. Then you can sort of go play in one of those stupid tournaments. So
I mean, the second they get knocked out from against Reno or whomever knocks them out, I think Grossman should hit send on a press release that says Menzies will be back next year, Francois says, and send it off.
If that's true,
if that's true, and even if it's not, even if they're going the other way. That's probably a decision that she should have already made.
Yeah.
And they should also be ready to go on that right away.
Yeah. By the way, there's a moving company in Menzies' office right now. Picture of his wife is getting packed up. Either way, it's done. Oh, and Thad Mata's landing at McCarran. Let's go. Presser tomorrow at 10.
If it's something where it's, you know, 3 or 4 days after the season ends and we're still waiting for word, that would tell me that there's some kind of issue going on behind the scenes, or they haven't sewed up that replacement coach, or they're still discussing
the boosters is money.
Or there's an issue with the boosters. Yeah, that would tell me that there's still some kind of upheaval going on if there wasn't an instant announcement.
Yeah, and if the boosters are in fact, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but as Case says, it's a new era in college athletics. If the boosters in fact are going to give the money to get rid of Marvin and bring in whomever, the deposit should be being made right now.
Just so we're clear, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not like one of these fans that believes, as Grimala put a while ago, the booster myth. But I just think if it does happen, that's going to be why. I think there's a non-zero chance. I don't want to be Mr. Booster over here, but totally denying that it happens and it could happen is delusional.
Can we get these boosters to appear at a press conference and just say why they donated the money? Is that not a good question?
I don't think that's a good. I don't think the university wants that look. I think they want to make it seem like they're operating
independently, and they just randomly came over a few million dollars.
Yeah, I think they want the appearance of autonomy, like we're doing it for our own reasons. They don't want you to think that they're being influenced by the money. So probably not.
Well, one thing we can all agree on: this game, we think Marvin Menzies is still going to be around. I think UNLV has a good chance on Thursday, but I think this feels a little bit more significant in the grand scheme of things than just your average 4-5 opening day of the Mountain West tournament game. There's a little bit riding on this, and it's going to shape the feeling of the program going forward. What happens on Thursday?
Totally agree.
All right, I'm glad we can go out on a.
You're a master of the English language.
I don't know about that, but I'm glad we can go out on that. Should be a great game on Thursday. And we'll come back next week to hopefully break down this press release of if Marvin Menzies is going or staying immediately after the game. We'll see if they have any tournaments, CBI, CIT, etc. As always, for Ray and Mike, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to The Rebel Room.